Okay, turn to Matthew chapter 12. Let's get right after this. Matthew chapter 12, we're going to be in the first 8 verses of Matthew 12. Father, would you please lead us through this passage? It has some amazing treasure in it. Would you show us the beauty and the wisdom of your son, Jesus? Would you show us the wisdom of the timeless things that he says? Even him speaking 2,000 years ago is alive right now. Would you prick our souls, feed our hearts, balance us out? In Jesus' name, amen. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." And he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it was not lawful for him nor for those that were with him to eat, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are innocent? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned people who are innocent. For the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath." This is the words of the Lord. Chapters 11 and 12 are reactions, as we've been talking about, to the events and the talks and the speaking that we've been hearing from Jesus in chapter 4 through 10. But they're also snapshots of Jesus. In these reactions that people are having to Jesus' life and ministry, his power and presence and his words, we get these little stills, these snapshots of who he is. Matthew is if you haven't noticed, he loves the number 3. And in each chapter, he gives 3 snapshots of Jesus. In chapter 11, we saw him responding to John the Baptist in that gracious way, saying he is the Messiah, but not quite the way that John wants him to be. There's a snapshot of Jesus. And then right after that, we saw Jesus give this incredible condemning judgment to the cities that he was most active in, the places and people that had seen him act and move the most on the most regular basis, and yet they were still unchanged. Even after seeing and hearing and having the Son of God in their presence, they didn't change their hearts, and he condemns them strongly. There's a snapshot of Jesus that Matthew gives us. And then right after that, the only place in all of Scripture that Jesus tells us about his personality, did you know that? Where he says, "I am gentle and lowly in my heart." He says, Come, follow me, learn from me, take my yoke upon you, because this is how I am. I'm gentle and I'm lowly in heart. Come after me." There's another snapshot of who Jesus is for us to contemplate. And in chapter 12, we get 3 more snapshots. We're going to talk for the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about what scholars call the Sabbath controversies. It's really Jesus's, what we find in Matthew, the first opposition, or the real strong opposition or challenge to Jesus's ministry we find today and next week when we talk about the Sabbath from these guys called the Pharisees. The next snapshot we're going to get in chapter 12 is a snapshot of Jesus talking about the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, some real controversial stuff about that. And then he's going to talk about the controversy of signs. That'll be our 3 snapshots of Jesus in chapter 12. But this week and next week, because it's so important, we're going to talk about this idea called the Sabbath. The Pharisees, some of you may or may not know, they were a Jewish hyper-conservative religious sect that concerned themselves with following the minutiae of the law of Moses to its absolute smallest detail. That's what they were all about. Out of a zeal and a purist kind of mind to go back to the way it ought to be, when Moses penned the law, when he first received it from God on Mount Sinai, if we were to go back to that, what would we look like? That's what we need as a Jewish nation. We need to go back to the law of Moses. And so they went at it in small detail and followed it as much as they can. And that's why scholars call these confrontations between Jesus and the Pharisees the Sabbath controversies. They're in every one of the Gospels. Luke records it. John records it. Mark records it. Matthew records it. Because this idea, how Jesus taught about Sabbath, that is a day of rest. That's what it means. Sabbath is the Hebrew word Shabbat. It means stop. That's what it means. Stop working. Stop it. Stop and rest. It's also, we'll get into this later, it's also translated delight. So stop and delight for 24 hours. Rest. Stop. And this was the law that the Pharisees most often got their knickers in all a twist about when it came to Jesus, because of how he taught it and how he observed it. The Pharisees were zealous about following the Sabbath to the letter, even though, here's what's interesting, the Bible doesn't have much to say in particular about exactly how to practice Sabbath. It clearly says you should. It is a command, but how you do it is pretty broad in the scriptures, but the Pharisees extrapolated all sorts of traditions that they called laws from these obscure passages in the Mosaic Code, and they made them these human traditions, and they slapped them on the people that this should be how you follow Sabbath. In Mark chapter 7, verse 8, Jesus says to them, he says, "You've left the commandment of God, and you hold to men's tradition." That's what he's saying. You've made these traditions that are not founded in the Mosaic Code. So, that's the beef here. But the Sabbath itself, let me say, is a command. And an immensely important one that we need to explore today. It'll take a couple of days to explore what the Sabbath is all about. And, by the way, that Jesus did observe weekly. A lot of people say because of how he responds that Jesus just was throwing off the command to Sabbath. Mm-mm. Au contraire, absolutely not. He followed it. It was the way he did it that was causing all of the beef. And I think we need to pause for a second and consider law in general. Because we, especially as a Christian community, evangelicals, we tend to get all judgmental about the 613 laws that Jewish folks were following in the time of Jesus. There are 613 laws from the Old Testament, not traditions, but actual laws from the Old Testament that the Jewish people did and still make themselves follow today. And we Christians tend to go, "Oh, those legalistic, oh my gosh, don't they know?" And we get all on them about that. But in reality, you know, think of America. We are a very kind of laws of the land run thick on the ground here. The 613 laws found in the Old Testament pale in comparison to the American Book of Legal Statutes. I mean, it's unreal how much law we have and we follow. What is it? In the Bible, though we know that law can and is egregiously abused on a regular basis, and we know that living in America, it is here too, right? Like a government or institutions or bureaucracies or companies or whatever it might be, the law is absolutely abused. But in its essence, according to the Bible, law in general is very good. Law's good. In fact, the Jewish law is the pride and definition of Israel. The nation of Israel was not known for anything else, really. They weren't great because they had lots of people, or because they were athletes, or because they were smarter, or because they had economic power. They were, what made them distinct, what made them the people of God, was that they were a people that followed Torah. That is the way of Yahweh, or Torah means instruction, rules of Yahweh, and they took great pride in this. This is what made them different. All throughout the Old Testament, the law is held and rejoiced over. Read Psalm 119. And David, or the psalmist, will talk about how he just longs for the law of God and the precepts of God and the way of Yahweh in his heart. Here's Moses. Moses says, "And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them." Why? So that you will live. That's why. Not so you will be stuffy and miserable and legalistic and strict and, you know, stale. Nothing like that. So that you can live. And the word there means live to the fullest. Reach your full human potential if you follow this way. And go in and take possession of the land that the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. See, I have taught you statutes and rules as the Lord my God commanded me that you should do them in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. Listen to this. Keep them and do them, for they will be your wisdom and your understanding. Keep them and do them. Listen to them and do them. Hear them and practice them. Make your life revolve around them in every way. And you will understand what it means to be human. What I always meant when I made mankind, follow these rules. Okay? And especially you, a lot of people can say, I'm one of them, the Sabbath law really encapsulates the whole point of it all. More on that in a second. Let's take a minute to explore what law is for. What is law for in its essence? Well, whatever we take joy in, whatever in our society or in your life is good and beautiful, we tend to throw a lot of laws around that to protect their integrity and to protect their beauty. Because they are beautiful, they're worth protecting, so we throw a lot of rules. If you think about it, anything and everything that we value has laws to both enhance and protect those things' inherent integrity. Think of any number of things. Think of the game of chess. It's a beautiful, wonderful game with a lot of rules and a lot of laws that kind of ham in the game of chess so you can play it and have fun doing it. Think of great culinary skill. Think of someone that can make a great meal. James, the reason I think of you is because you went to culinary school. And when you went to culinary school, they taught you a bunch of rules. This is how you do it. You cut shallots like this. You have to have a certain kind of heat. You throw in this kind of ingredient, but not this kind of ingredient. Oh, not too much. The amount is important. You have to let it sit for a little bit first, right? These are all laws. Why are they there? Because you want to experience the greatest mouthful of experience that you ever, there's something transfixing and incredible when you eat that thing. Last night we went to a party and someone had made the best, and I mean that, cheesecake I had ever eaten in my life. I'm not a cheesecake guy. I'm not a cheesecake fan. But I felt like, well, because she made it from scratch, I probably should. So I took this plate, and I'll tell you what, I had all sorts of new chemtrails going on in my brain. Like dopamine hit. I mean, it was like, it was amazing. And even this morning on the way to church, Noble was like, wow, that cheesecake was incredible. And all of us were like, right? That was just amazing. You know, why? Well, she followed a certain recipe that has certain laws in it. Think of construction or beautiful architecture. It follows laws to protect its beauty and its integrity. Think of playing an instrument. There are certain things you play and certain things you don't. There are certain volume that you play or certain tempos that you play. Those are all rules. Think of the game of football. We were just talking about football right before. Football, have you noticed there's so many, you know, they have those officials out there for a reason. Those flags fly. Why? Because football is an amazing game. It's kind of an American staple. And it's worth protecting, and worth protecting the incredible athletes that play it, right? And so there's all these, again, now rules, laws can and are abused. That's not my argument right now for now. We'll get to that in a second. But in and of itself, law is good. Law is good. And again, we surround these things with laws to protect the integrity of what is good, true, and beautiful about them, because we want them to shine to their fullest potential. If there's some lousy, ran-down shack somewhere, we're probably not going to put a bunch of laws around it because we just don't find it that valuable, okay? Laws protect, but they also help us reach the fullest potential. Think of the game of basketball and all the techniques that go into that perfect, fine-tuned shot. Laws, if you want, that if you follow them, will make you a better shot. Or cooking, or learning an instrument. Now, when you follow these laws, think about this. They're not binding on you. They're freeing you. They're freeing you to express yourself in the full. It's form and freedom. Stay between in this form, and in that form, you will flourish. Follow these things, practice these things, and you will flourish. The point is to get them into you. Not to keep them out of you, but to get them into you so that playing the piano becomes natural, right? You can read a book about how to make a cheesecake. You can read a book that Michael Jordan put out about how to do the perfect free throw shot. You can read a book about how to play the piano. But the point is not to keep those laws outside of yourself on a written page, but to get them into the muscle memory of your body so that I can walk to that piano, close my eyes, and hit a G chord without even thinking of it. Not because I'm so great, but because I've been doing it and 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 doing it, where now it's part of who I am. See? That's the idea. Now, it's to let these laws shape a part of you and shape you into their image. You become someone by what you do, by what you practice, by what you believe, okay? Then playing or doing just becomes a part of you. Now, apply this to the Bible and to the spiritual life. It's no different. It's no different. This is the whoop and wharf of spiritual transformation. It's no different. James puts it this way in James chapter 1, verse 21. He says, "Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness, and receive with humility the implanted logos, the implanted word, which is able to save your soul." John, in his gospel, says that Jesus is the logos. He is the word made flesh. He's the Torah, the law made flesh, if you would. And this is what will save us. This is what is saving us and is changing us. Excuse me, to the degree that we not only hear, but do practice these things. This is the shot I have to change. This is the shot we have to be different by doing and putting these things into practice. People say, oh, people who follow the law of Moses and these Christian ethics are legalistic. No, that's foolish thinking. That's foolish thinking. That's like telling Michael Jordan, "Don't tell me how to throw a free throw. Don't tell me all your techniques and rules. I just want to do it my own way and then be as good as you." Right? How's that going to play out for you? No. The person that wants to, anybody that wants to be a good basketball player wants the laws of Michael Jordan, wants the rules. Anybody that wants to be a good culinary chef, they want to know the secrets. They want the disciplines. They crave those things to get better. Anybody that wants to be a musician craves the tricks, studies the fretboard when their idol is playing it. Anybody that does. I remember when I wanted to be a musician, I wanted to get in the mosh pit. Not because I wanted to mosh, and I wanted to watch the guy. And people were jumping all around me, and I just wanted to see what they were doing. I craved the laws because it was the laws that would set me free to play that thing better. You know what I'm saying? Okay. In the same way, when it comes to Sabbath, the Sabbath is supposed to become you and shape you that you do certain things naturally, okay? The Sabbath holiday command is supposed to get into your body so that your whole disposition of life is one of rest, peace, worship, delight, a non-anxious presence. Think of that. Could we all use a little bit of that right now in our lives, in our society? That is go, 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 go. If I don't, then something bad's gonna happen. I've gotta do the next thing. I've gotta wake up. Can you imagine being a person that could stop, rest, and delight, and then be a non-anxious presence to the world around you? That's the idea of Sabbath, of what it really means to be human. First of all, notice that Jesus is not abolishing Sabbath, but he's reclaiming it. He's reclaiming it for what it was always meant to be. What does the Sabbath teach us? Well, this is from Exodus 20. This is where the Sabbath, this is in the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, when the Sabbath was given. God says this through Moses, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, right? That means, holy means dedicated. You dedicate a day to stopping and resting. And then God says, 6 days you should work, labor, and do all your work, but the seventh day is a stopping day. It's a Sabbath day. It's a delighting day. It's a resting day dedicated to the Lord your God. On it, you shall not do any, and he gets kind of specific. He says, on it, you shall not do any work. None. You or your son or your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, or your livestock, so the immigrant that's around, who is within your gates, because in 6 days, God made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, including mankind, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, because of that, the Lord blessed the stopping day, the Sabbath day, the delighting day, and he made it holy. He made it dedicated. Okay? So here, God tells Moses that the Sabbath is fundamentally linked to the fabric of the universe. It's linked to creation itself. It's in the rhythm of the stars, if you want. Okay? That is, before the fall, before sin, the idea of Sabbath was put in place. And you can see this in Genesis chapter 1. In the first chapter of Genesis, in the first sentence, did you know the first sentence in the first chapter of Genesis has 7 words in it? The second sentence has 14 words in it, in Hebrew words. If you were to look at it in Hebrew, it has 7 paragraphs in Genesis chapter 1 through 2, verse 1. Obviously, 7 is the entire idea. And then, with that literary device, that repeating phrase, and there was evening and there was morning the first day, and there was evening and there was morning the second day, and there was evening and there was morning the third day. What is it doing? What is the author doing? He's drawing you further down the day of the week, and it crescendos in day 7, this day of rest and Sabbath and worship. My point is, it's all about this. The plot line of humanity, the plot line of reality is all about this. What does God make on day 6, by the way? The day right before. If you had a mirror, you would know the answer. It's you, humans, human beings. God made on day, right before this idea of rest, mankind is made. So the image we get from Genesis 1 through 2 verse 1 is mankind in Sabbath, stopping, delighting, worshiping rest with their Creator. It is a relationship of absolute contentment and fulfillment. In the Bible, the word rest doesn't just mean physical rest. God obviously wasn't tired from creating the world and creating the cosmos. He was done. He was content. He was fulfilled. He had stopped. There was nothing else that needed to be done. He had nothing to gain, nothing to lose, nothing to show, and nothing to prove. He was at rest with us, and so were we. So was Adam and Eve. And that is the plot of the Bible. If you want to know what your life is for, that's it, friends. That's it. If you want to know why you were created, it's for that relationship. It's to show the world that. That's why the Sabbath day is amazing and should be observed. Totally should be observed. So we see mankind stopping and delighting in God. That's why Sabbath is so important. And when we practice it, it gets that idea, those ideas, that remembrance, that purpose. It answers the big questions of life. Why am I here? Every 7 days, oh, that's right, I'm here to delight. I'm more than what I produce. I'm more than paying my bills. I am a child of God delighting in his presence. That's who I am. But there's another important reason why the law is so important. In Deuteronomy, when this new generation goes into the promised land, the old generation that had not rested, that had not obeyed, they died in the wilderness. They didn't see the promised land, including Moses. Now there's this new generation, and Moses has to re-give the law to them, the Torah, the way of Yahweh to them, to this new generation before they go in and take the land. And he repeats the idea of the Sabbath. But it's almost carbon copy, but there's a difference. See if you can pick it out. He says, observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Okay, it's the same line as in Exodus so far. As the Lord your God commanded you. Same thing. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day to the Lord your God. So far, so good. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock. So the foreigner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. Okay, same, but the reason's different now. Here it is. Because you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Okay, in this rendering, Moses doesn't link the Sabbath day to creation, although it still is, of course, but he adds another reason to it and says, now it's because you're remembering that you used to be enslaved to a machine. Now it's going to inform not our the creation version informs how Sabbath applies between us and God, right? Because we were created by him in his image. This now, the Sabbath informs how we see ourselves and our fellow human beings. Israel also had slaves. And God said, but no, you're not to treat them the way the Egyptians treated you. They are human beings. They're not just chattel that you're going to throw at your task. They get to rest. They're made in my image too. They get their dignity. And he says, this will help you. Remember how you were treated. Remember how people treated you. They took your humanity away. They made you build their stuff for them in Egypt. But now you're free and you worship me. This is a reminder. So in a way, it was a reminder, but even a protest to how people were doing things around them. In the land of Canaan, and the ancient Near East, the other cultures that were surrounding Israel used their slaves exactly the way the Egyptians used Israelites as slaves. They took away their humanity. They didn't care about feeding them. They worked them until they died. They didn't let them sleep. It was all about the end result, the end product. And Moses is saying, this is how the other nations around you are going to know that you're different. You treat people with dignity. You give them, they're made in the image of God. And they're going to see you rest every 7 days. You're going to stop producing and you're going to let the land rest. Because you're going to remind yourself that your sustenance doesn't come from the land alone or from your work alone, but from me. And therefore you can treat other people better. It's a protest that people are more than dollars that they can produce for the machine of society. See, this law goes back to the big questions of life. What are people? What are people? So the Sabbath law is not only good, it's built into the very fabric of the universe, and it's essential for human flourishing in society. And when we ignore it, friends, Friends, when we ignore it, we are literally balking against reality itself, and in some cases, perpetuating an oppressive view of mankind. An oppressive view of mankind. We're perpetuating that idea. So in a sense, the Pharisees are right to protect this. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. This is why, you know, what was it? Some of you are old enough to remember back when everything shut down on Sundays in our culture as well. Supermarkets were closed, right? We would rest because our nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles that mankind is more than a machine that we can throw into the industries of life to make us richer. That we didn't share that. Christians would say no. It was a protest against that to say no. Humans are more than that. We're more than that. Can you imagine, friends? Just imagine with me. Can you imagine if the largest voting bloc in America, Christians, stopped once a week? Can you imagine how that would change our world? If we didn't go and hand out tracts, I mean, that's good too. But imagine if all we did was just stop. We bought all of our stuff before that. We led up the week, we bought all of our stuff, and we just stopped and rested and delighted. Can you imagine how that would change our society? I mean, it would be a major, major change. Major economic change. It's beautiful. And it would be evangelistic in and of itself. It would send a message. Human beings they have the spark of the divine in them. They're images of God. Okay. That's my plug for Sabbathing. Okay. But as wonderful as laws like this one are, they can and frequently are abused to the detriment of the ones that they're made even to set free. Okay? That's what's going on here. How can the law be abused? What is, as good as the law is, and laws are good, we put them around what we think are beautiful. As good as they are, what's the shadow side of the law? Well, we don't need to look any further than the Pharisees in our passage. Number one, I think you'll be able to see that they, and this is typically what we do too when we abuse the law, we confuse the essential for the non-essential and the non-essential for the essential. You know what I'm saying? We tend to make secondary points our primary ones and primary points the secondary ones. These guys have a preoccupation, really an obsession with the minutiae of the Jewish law. When it came to Sabbath, Pharisees told their communities, you are only allowed to go, I can't remember how many steps it is, but a certain amount of steps on a Sabbath would be acceptable. And they would, true story, they would measure that out in a rope, on a rope, and they would tie it to their home and then the other end to their foot, so they would know how far they were allowed to go on the Sabbath to not break it. Okay? That's what they were doing. What's that? No, they calculated that too. There and back again, Bilbo. What's that? It takes a lot of work to tie. They do that maybe before the Sabbath, get it all ready, right? It takes a lot of work. These guys they have this obsession. This is what many of us, when we talk about our home groups, we have, as an elder board, a vision that our home groups would be not just places that we talk about things, but that we practice certain things, that we do certain things. And what many of us get a little uneasy with that, and rightfully so, some of us are afraid that by emphasizing the ancient disciplines of the life of Jesus in the church, that the law can stifle and paralyze when it's not properly understood. And that's a real concern, absolutely. We don't want to become like that. The Pharisees have made Sabbath observance a burden, not something that frees, but something that enslaves and actually stifles their flourishing. And one way that we can do that is by remembering the point of it all and what's essential. This is what Jesus was getting at when he said, hey, even the priests, if you read in the law, the priest profaned the Sabbath when they served in the temple. In fact, if you read in the Law of Moses, the priests worked double the amount on Sabbath days in the temple than any other day. And yet, what's Jesus saying? He's saying, temple is essential, Sabbath comes under that. You guys have flipped it around. You've made Sabbath more essential. And then what does he say about himself? Something greater than the temple is here. In other words, Sabbath is good, temple, but I'm even greater than that. Okay? Let's keep it straight. Let's keep our priorities straight here. Notice that a misunderstanding of the law also becomes a form of aggression. The Pharisees, they considered themselves the police. You know, they would go around and tell people when they were doing it wrong. They would confront you in public. They'd walk up to Jesus and say, your disciples, I mean, you know, the disciples are hungry. They're starving. They're human beings that are starving. And as they're walking through the grain fields, they take the grain and they start just popping the grain in their mouth to get some calories in. They walked a lot back then. Right? They didn't have any cars. Most people couldn't afford animals to carry them along the way. So they're hungry. And Jesus, he didn't even have to give them permission. They just knew that their rabbi was going to be okay with this. Interesting about Jesus. Again, this is a snapshot. Jesus, they would have seen him observe the Sabbath, but in a way that they knew that he cared about their needs. And they plucked the heads of grain and they popped it in their mouth. And here come the Pharisees. Hey, you're not supposed to be doing it like that. We're doing it right. It becomes a form of, you know, have you heard the phrase Bible thumping? Or are they going to beat me over the head with my Bible? Or those types of things. Oh, you listen to that music? Oh, I saw that post of you on Instagram. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And we just like to get in there and judge. And you shouldn't be doing that. And we should do that. We're missing the point, see? We're missing the point. We know that we're misusing the law when we use it as a form of aggression. I'm doing it right, and so I know when you're doing it wrong. That's the general attitude. I'm doing life right. I know what's right, and therefore I see when you do it the wrong way. Look at Jesus' response. It's so quick. It's like he pulls a sword out of his mouth and just three... He says, have you not read that David did what David did when he was hungry? And those that were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those that were with him, but only for the priests. That's one. Or have you not read, and with the Pharisees, this is typically Jesus' response. Other people, he will say, have you not heard? With the Pharisees, he almost always says, have you not read? Because they proclaim to be experts in the Bible, the Bible experts. So he goes back to the Bible. Number two, have you not read in the law, the Torah, how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are innocent? That's what I was just telling you about. They work extra hard on the Sabbath, but they're innocent. I tell you, something greater than the Sabbath is here. That's two. And if you had known what this means, here's number three. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. You would have not have condemned people who are innocent. For the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus, like I said, the Word made flesh, quotes from all three sections of the Hebrew Bible in one sentence to give them a full-orbed, one-sentence, holistic Bible study in one shot. He quotes from Moses, the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, when he reminds them that the priest worked double hard on the Sabbath, making the point that the temple trumps the specific Sabbath laws. Again, he's reminding them what's essential. He quotes from the historic works of the Old Testament when he talks about Samuel, in the book of Samuel, that David ate what he was not authorized to eat in the temple. And then he quotes from the prophets when he says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. That's from the prophet Micah. A full orb, just a full balanced Bible study right back at them. In other words, the point of the law is not the scrupulous self-sacrifice you draw from it. It's the wide-hearted humanity that the prophets make of it. The view of humanity is so, what are the laws there to protect? The beauty of humanity. The image of God. To set us free. I want mercy and not sacrifice means I want human sympathy, not superhuman disciplines. I want sympathy, and I want you to be free. That's what's essential, is your flourishing. Now listen, as you go about practicing Sabbath, I hope that you will. I hope that you'll try to figure this out. Let me give you some tips. What's the point? It's your flourishing, right? So some of you may not be able to do 24 hours right now. We live in a crazy society. We live in an economy that is driving us because we can't keep the lights on if we don't keep working, right? Some of you, all you had time was to come and sit your butt down in church today, and you're going back to work after this. Some of you might be on call. Look, I get it. I get it, absolutely. But what can you do? Can you take an hour? Can you gradually move that to 2 hours? Can you take a Saturday morning? Can you make it 24 hours? Can you trust God with a 24-hour Sabbath? The point is not the length of how time, the point is the quality of it. It's a time to stop. I'm gonna stop worrying, and I'm gonna rest, and I'm gonna delight, and I'm gonna worship. Kristen, yeah. Because it's to remember a time of rest. Typically, it's a Sabbath day. That's a great question, Kristen. Saturday, for the Christian church, it moved to Sunday because of the resurrection of Jesus. Yeah, great question. That's a great question. Yep, it moved. We celebrate the resurrection of Christ, which is when he rested in victory over the sin of the world. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Saturday's great, but does it have to be? There's a lot of people right now that will argue with me about that. They say, no, it's Saturday. It must be Saturday, okay? Right? And there's all sorts of arguments about that. The point, that's, again, we're mixing up the non-essential with the essential. What's the point? Stop, rest, worship. Would it make a huge impact on society if we had a coordinated effort on one day, like it used to be on Sunday? Of course, totally. But for now, do what you can. Take a moment, take a breath, stop, delight. When our family celebrates Sabbath, and I'll tell you, it is hard to do. It is very difficult. I grew up a doer, and it is very, very hard for my brain to stop. We try to practice stop, delight. So we go, Nicole has these questions that she asks Noble and I, and we go around the table talking about what we're grateful for the week, what we're content for. And we also try to make it a point just for us to not think about what we wish we had. For 24 hours, we're not going to think about what we should buy, what we should order, what we need, what we want. We're going to be content with the stuff we have, with the toys that Noble has, with the time that we have. We're going to try, and I'll tell you, that is very hard. And it points out how natural it is. You walk through your house and you go, oh, we got to get that repainted. I forgot. And we go, oh, shoot, I did it again. You know, or you see the yard and, oh, I got to mow the lawn tomorrow. Oh, shoot, I did it again. Don't beat yourself up. It's just an exercise. That's all it is. It's a discipline to try to train your mind and your heart and your body that, no, that's for tomorrow. Right now, I'm content in the Lord. And you use that to bring you back to God's presence in that moment. We try to eat some yummy food. We try to make it delightful. Nicole always pulls that off. I've never eaten anything bad that she's ever made. I haven't. She's saying, yes, you have, but I don't remember that. It's always yummy. We'll make it fun. We'll go grab ice cream. We'll go get Dairy Queen, or we'll go get some fun dessert, and we play a game together, and we just have a blast. Sometimes we watch America's Funniest Home Videos. We just watch and we laugh, and we just try to have a time of laughter and enjoyment and a time of being together. Sometimes we have stuff that we do together. Sometimes we all kind of go do our own things. Sometimes Nicole will go out and spend some life-giving time with a good friend. She'll go out and spend, like, we're going to go out and just hang out. Sometimes I'll do that, or we'll come back together. We all have these rhythms, but for 24 hours, we try to keep that to that, and it's an act of faith. I am a busy guy. Nicole's extremely busy. To stop and trust God with our bills, with our yard, with our house, Oh, you guys, it is an exercise. It's like going to the gym. It is really, really, really difficult. So I would say, be gracious to yourself. Be lenient on yourself. Be patient. Learn to laugh at yourself. Don't take yourself too seriously, but try to observe it. And you know what? Our family, we've gotten to the point where we crave it. We have it on our calendar. Our week starts to march around it. Oh, a couple more days till Sabbath. Oh, we're almost there. And we put it up. We light, sometimes what we do, we used to do, we light a candle to commemorate its beginning. And we light a candle. Okay, it's time. And we put our phones away. We power them off, put our phones away. We take a breath, and then we pray. We eat a yummy meal. Nicole leads in some questions that we can talk about what we're grateful for or whatever. Or what we, one good one that's challenging, what we like about ourselves. Ooh, that's so hard for me. She's like, what do you like about yourself? Oh my gosh, I'm extremely good looking. But it's good. It's all healthy stuff that we try to get into the rhythm of doing so we can flourish. And I'll tell you what, when we get back after the week, we're more rested, we have more energy, we have our full brain rather than half a brain. We're able to really get after it and make a big difference when we do it. I don't want to paint the picture that we do it all the time. There's weeks that we miss, and we go, oh, shoot, or we fall out of the habit. When we find that we're Sabbathing in label only, but we're actually really not practicing it, we're not really doing this, are we? No. Okay, let's get back to it. You know, we have those things, and that will happen for you too. That will happen for you too. Practice it, you guys. Practice it. Get it into your body. Why? Because what's it telling you? It's telling you that you were made to worship God and to be in fellowship with God. That's what you were made to do. And it's telling the people around you that that's what you were made for too. That's how valuable you are. This week, I focused on Sabbath in relation to God and our relationship with Him. Next week, we're going to see how Sabbath has to do with other human beings. This week, you can think of it as like a vertical look at Sabbath. Next week, and you can, for your homework, you can read it ahead. You'll see how Sabbath deals with dealing with somebody else. Jesus, man to man, healing another man on the Sabbath. And He says, this is what the Sabbath is for. This is what the Sabbath is all for. Okay? So, it's so important. We'll spend 2 weeks on it. And in your home groups, this is the first thing that you guys can discover and talk about how you can start to practice it. And be gracious with each other, but have a discussion. How can we practice Sabbath in Seattle, in my particular life, and help each other and love each other through it? Plan? Good plan? Knuckles in? Boom.